Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Oh, it's been ages. Jules Gill, it's been ages I've been here.
Look at your little face, mate.
I know, my little burnt face. I'm a little burnt face, man. That's me in Japan. Burnt face Japan. But yes, making a grand return. I forget how long I've been away, to be honest.
Too bloody long, mate. It feels like I've had my heart isolated in Siberia for a long couple of weeks.
It's been a long time. But yes, this is the Untitled Banter Podcast, the UBP, the UBP.
UBP.
The UBP. I'm Scott Tilford. That's Jules Gill.
Yes, I am.
And we get through as many talking points, questions, whatever people want to know. Turns out people want to know a lot of things about Japan.
Surprising that, right?
Surprisingly, it's a beautiful country. I enjoyed my time to a ludicrous, incalculable degree. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to some specific Japan questions as we go. I thought we should talk about Zelda stuff because
oh, okay.
I was trying,
cool.
trying to catch up on, you know, what did I miss when I was away? Because it was about like 2.5 weeks that I was mm-hmm. away. And I literally turned my mobile phone off, data off. I didn't keep up with anything going on in the Western world. So it was only really yesterday when I put my phone back on and I was like, oh, Zelda trailer. Oh, there's a Resident Evil thing with like a giant whip hitting people in a.
Let's not talk about that because that's. I don't want to get angry because I've already said my piece on what I think of that new Resident Evil Dead Island. Is that what it's called? Death Island.
I did know Death Island.
Alcatraz Party Poppers. It's just
MCU Avengers Cam. Yeah.
We will talk about it. I'll get angry in a minute. I'll wind myself up for it. But I had a big old rant about it when I was on live stream a couple of days ago, and oh boy, did I walk away. Itching.
I saw the clip that I think you shared or Sai shared where it's like it's to the Avengers music and I thought it was actually from the I didn't realize that it was the Avengers music. I was it's just like a general sort of cinematic score or something, but it literally is shot like a one take from an MCU movie. That's definitely what they're chasing. Yeah,
because that's the best thing, isn't it? Because that's the thing to go for right now, isn't it? When everyone's like burned out on the MCU, you just go like, hey lads, remember the Avengers? And everyone's just like, yes dad, we remember the bloody Avengers. Yes, so look, it's me, I'm phony cock.
It's like, hey, do you want the thing that was a big deal in 2012? Not that I'm completely pooing on the MCU, but I feel like you said, it's not the in thing anymore and hasn't been for quite some time.
Yeah, I every single time I look at that trailer, because everyone else is going nuts for it. They're like, oh my God, all the protagonists are finally together again. We get all of them. And I was like, first off, we don't get Barry Burton, so 0 out of 10. That is definitely a huge sticking point for me. But also... They just don't gel very well. It's like, I don't know, man. I just feel deflated even thinking about it. You've got all of the potential of your mainline stars all together, mm-hmm. and you put them up against a C-tier villain who's basically just reading from the big book of villain quotes, just going like, oh yes, I will choose to wipe the slate clean. And anyone who uses anyone who uses the wipe the slate clean line as a villain is relegated to the Sunday League, mate. You're a Sunday League football team. You're a pair of shirtless dads kicking around a half-deflated soccer ball and one of you slipped on a dog turd.
And pretending it's still for the kids, pretending it's still going to get a wider audience in. Yeah, it feels like their sort of Jurassic World Dominion moment where it's like, let's just get everyone together. That works, right? And it's like, no, we need some space.
It's your least favorite thing because it's the, hey, remember this? Remember this, guy? Remember this?
Funnily enough, you say that. I watched the Mario movie last night. I was jet lagged when I got back, but most of yesterday I spent in a dizzy haze. But I thought I should go see Mario because I've been looking forward to it for so long. That movie's incredible, and I get that that movie's being absolutely slated. The review scores are like 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's a 5-star banger. Don't even tell me any different. It definitely works better if you know all the little references.
Yeah.
But oh my God, it's so much fun.
I've heard so many conflicting things, but it seems like every single critic, as in like critical outlet, is giving this like good reviews. Like IGN said it was really, really good. I know that you've said it's really good. I've seen other people who've said that it's really, really good, and I trust their opinions on films. And the people that are like saying it's bad, it's like, oh, it's a very basic storyline, and Mario is voiced by Carissa Peratt, and I don't like the fact that he doesn't say, it's a me, Mario.
The thing is, it's like,
I don't give two squirts of Donkey Kong's grape juice, mate. I do not care. As long as it is a good movie, I do not care.
Genuinely, there's no more character. I get the whole thing about they wanted more character depth or tension or something. I don't know why, because
from
it's
Mario.
I know, that's my thing. Because
he's literally called Jumpman because that's all he did.
There's also a Jumpman reference in the movie.
I know, I saw it. Yeah, Chris Martinet does it.
Oh my God, Charles Martin is so good.
Charles Martin, that's what I meant.
There's a bit at the very beginning after they show the Super Mario Brothers rap where Luigi's like, oh, do you think we did the accents? Is that too much? Chris Martin, his character, turns around. He's like, no, it's brilliant. Woo.
And
I'm like,
this
is
absolutely
brilliant.
He does the Jumpman jump. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, it's because who is it? Is it Illuminations?
Yes, Illumination, the Minions people.
They are exceptionally good at doing character movements as references. There's loads and loads of things in this film. Like, I watched somebody put out a video that was like nearly 100 Easter eggs or little secret moments that you didn't see in that. I haven't even seen the film yet, and I watched that and I was like, damn, this actually feels like the film for me. Because sometimes I don't like it when it's the corporate, like, hey, look, remember this then, hey, remember that thing. But when it's done actually in time, like in tying into the source material well, if it feels actually connected and makes sense within the universe in which you're saying it, not just a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, then absolutely fine. I'm there for it.
Honestly, like, Shigeru Miyamoto was like apparently heavily involved with it. And you can tell, like, it feels the worst parts of it are where it becomes an Illumination film and they just put Holding Out for a Hero or like,
I've heard that the pop
take
songs
on
are
me.
Bad.
Yeah, there's like 5 pop song moments in it that are really jarring because they just don't fit. They just feel like they're thrown in there. Mm. But the overall score, I think it's by Brian Tyler or something, is unbelievable. Like, they take so many little motifs and melodies and little things from like the entire history of Super Mario and just make them into this great operatic, a great like cinematic score. I legit like teared up when the full theme came in because I'm that much of like, I was enjoying it so much. It's beautiful, man. I think that stuff is so much fun.
However, do you think that your viewpoint was altered slightly because you had literally just gone to Nintendo brainwashing head HQ, aka Super Mario World theme park.
Yeah, they don't call it that over there. They call
wait
7 hours to go on the Mario Kart ride, and we all just
Yes,
sir. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Wait, what?
Oh, yeah. So the Super Nintendo World, as an overall experience, is one of my favorite things I've ever done in my life, and I recommend it as a park. I especially recommend it if you're a Nintendo fan, and obviously quadruply so if you're a Mario fan. But the way they organize the lines and the access is abysmal. It is psychotic. Right. There's a whole thing in that the Universal Studios overall park that it's part of where you buy an area ticket. That's what you buy online, and that gets you into the hub, the middle piece. That's where everything plugs into. So you can go into Jurassic Park, Park World, you can go to Harry Potter Land, you can go to Nintendo World. There are separate tickets for the area itself, and only Harry Potter and Nintendo have area tickets. And you can't buy area tickets in advance. You can buy a queue jump, but you can't buy the area ticket. So what you have to do is spend an amount of money to get into the area itself. Obviously, it's very busy. There's a lot of queues and everything.
And then you buy the microtransaction.
Yes, when you're in the area, when you're in the hub area and you want to go to Nintendo World, you then have to you don't have to book the area slot that you need to be into.
Right.
But if you're doing that on the day, which you will be, unless you get there half an hour early or an hour earlier or whatever, which is like 6 a.m., let's say you get there at 8 a.m. like we did, which is still an hour and a half before the park is listed to open, the opening slot for the Super Nintendo World was 7 hours away. So we had to kill 7 hours in the Universal. And the only remedy for that is getting up at like 6 a.m. and hoping there's a slot earlier than that. It's ridiculous.
That is insane. But did you say you could buy a queue skip thing as well?
So Yeah, so the microtransaction stuff, to give it like a term, is you can buy a band. It's called a power-up band that you put on your wrist.
Of course.
And that
it does, is.
That lets you interact with the park itself when you're in, so you can punch the question blocks and like, everything reacts. It's that stuff is so much fun. Okay. I love that stuff. But that's a separate price thing.
Right.
But yeah, the only other thing you can do to mitigate wait time is buy a queue jump, but that doesn't work in terms of getting you into the area earlier. You're still waiting 7 hours to get into the area. And then if you've paid the additional money, you can skip the queue.
I feel like you're Charlie Day in Always Sunny, pointing at the board full of that and just going like, who's Pepe Silvia? Like, I genuinely, I know you've explained it to me maybe about three times already. Oh, I don't understand the process
of
what you're saying.
Right,
let me see if I've collected the information correctly.
Yes.
So I want to go to Nintendo World. So I buy my Universal ticket. That gets me into the Hub World.
Yes.
Then to go to the Lost Levels, I need to pay Nintendo an extra fee to get inside there. But I can I can only do that on the day, and I can and it will only give me a time slot of which I'm allowed to go in.
So,
and
you don't
get to choose that time slot. It's just whatever's available to you.
Yes,
and by the time you got there, it was already sold out for the immediate access and you had to wait 7 hours, even though you were early. That makes no sense whatsoever.
I've never had such a crushing realization of just the person, because you bring up the times that are available on the app. So it's just sort of like you're there, it's 8 a.m., you've got up early. Obviously, we had to travel to the park itself. Even though we were in Osaka, you still had to travel for like, I don't know, half an hour or something. To get there, and you're dazed and confused, Led Zeppelin style, and then you bring up the list of slots, thinking, "Well, we're here. It's 8 a.m. We're early, if anything.
Yeah, it's not open yet.
No." And then one of the park people who was looking after the place was like, "And your next slot is 10 to 5. Was 4:50." And we were like, "It's 8 a.m."
Did they at least do it in like a funny voice in character? Was it like Toad, or was it like a bureaucrat? It's just like, "I'm sorry to say that you can't come in."
I don't know if that would have made it better or worse, but no, it was just the crushing realization of, because obviously to them it's every day, that's just the way that it works. And so it was just like, no, of course you've got an 8 hour wait, don't worry about it, just go in. Because then we were like, well, what are we going to do for 7 to 8 hours? We can't do anything, we haven't got tickets for anything else. And so the woman was just like, well, just go enjoy the park. What park? There's no park.
You basically like, you look over there and you meet the eye of Harry Potter, like one of the Harry Potter people, and it's just like, oh, come on, it's got to go. Oh, god damn, I looked at him, I made eye contact, now I've got to go and speak to them. Tell me what this Wizarding World's all about then.
Yeah, like, because we ended up like sort of doing loops around like the Jurassic Park world, because you can get into like the beginnings of each hub world, because like they're all plugged into like the you can get into the entrances that connect to the hub world in the middle, but obviously we're not going to pay to go on some of the other rides. But even then, all those queues are like 70 minute 80 minute.
Because they're going to be theme parks themselves, they are literally
and it's like, that's the other thing that they sell you is the express ticket to skip those queues, which works for Nintendo Land's queues, but obviously you can't get to Nintendo because you're waiting for your slot. But like, even then, you can't upgrade your standard ticket to an Express Pass because we've already bought the regular one. You have to do it early.
This is a bureaucratic nightmare, mate. This sounds draining to the extreme. Do you know what I imagine is that as all of this information is like being loaded into your cerebral cortex, you're processing it all, you feel the ghostly hand of Sonic on your shoulder and he goes, I'd never treat you like this, Scott. Let's go play some Sonic Frontiers. Hey!
To be fair, I mean, I guess it's quite telling that, like, because we went to a lot of themed cafes, Kirby, Pokemon, Final Fantasy, went to a Capcom cafe. I didn't find a Sega one at all, so I didn't even know if this is a Sonic one. But they couldn't do that stuff. But yeah, I was sitting there for my 7 hours just baking in the sun as my skin burned. I was just like, okay, I need to do like a PSA, like a video for this. Just go, hey, by the way that this stuff is organized is horrific, and you'll be stuck waiting for hours unless you get there super early. Like, and even then, it's just a lottery.
I'm not going to lie, mate. This is like pure Schadenfreude for me, because I am like, I'm loving your pain in this. It's like, it's entertaining to me. And the only way it would be even funnier is if you were dressed up like Bowser
or Mario,
and you had to do like a 7 hour stint in the car.
In the morning, right? When we got there, we had our paper tickets, so we had the regular area pass. So we had the regular hub access pass thing, and we were going up to the Nintendo portion of the park with that pass, thinking, well, that'll get us in. And I was super excited, and I was like walking up this big path, and, oh my god, and the music's playing, and the coin noises are triggered by you walking past them. And I was like, this is gonna be phenomenal. And I was like, oh, I can't wait to get in there and buy like a Bowser hat and buy all this stupid BS that I don't need. I'm gonna have the best time ever. And then just to be roadblocked, to be sandbagged, to be punched in the face by like the person going, you can't actually go in for another 7 hours. It was just the most, every part of that just drained out of me where I was like, well, I'm not going to buy the Bowser head now. I'm not going to buy the Toad drinks carton.
If they had said, sorry, Scott, your ticket's in another castle, that would have been the only way they would have saved it.
You got to go spend time in the Water World exhibition because they've got that on the side.
But
tell you what, though, we spent 7 hours killing time. There was a lovely little parade that went around the Universal thing. Got some Mario Karts and stuff in there. When we finally got into Super Nintendo World, it was phenomenal. It was incredible. I would never recommend someone wait 7 hours for anything at this point.
But
what was there was absolutely phenomenal. I love my time there. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing with like the whole park is like gamified. So you're sort of doing different mini games to then fight Bowser Jr., who I love Bowser Jr. anyway.
Yep.
And so like you do this thing where you're like, it's like a silhouette of you because it's like backlit. And then it's like the eye toy where you're sort of punching missiles and jumping over stuff. You properly fight him. And if you get hit, you shrink and your silhouette shrinks. So your little tiny
That's
you fighting
so
him.
Cool.
It's genuinely really, really cool. And so it is beautiful. It's a really, really great park. And I understand why they restrict people the area pass thing because they can't have too many people in there for it would just be too busy. But 7 hours, Jules.
Do you know what the funny thing is, mate? 7 hours is pretty much the same amount of time that we spent talking about this when originally we started talking about Zelda. we haven't even answered a single question yet.
I've not even done anything. I definitely needed to let the world know, the portion of the world that listens to this podcast, that the way all the queues and the area stuff is organized at Universal Nintendo is abysmal, at least for the Japan one. But yeah, we should talk about the Zelda Tears of the Kingdom stuff because that was something that I think broke yesterday. I've sort of barely kept up with anything. But it's how much is it just nuts and bolts? It's just Banjo-Kazooie nuts and bolts.
Don't say that to me. Don't ruin this game.
What do you mean? No, it literally is.
To be fair, though, the
Legend of the Bolts.
The moment that a lot of people have screenshot and sent across as clips has just been the single like three or four frames of Link riding the battle block, basically.
Yeah. It's a big fridge with some wheels on it. It's a
fridge with wheels on that's just firing a cannon at this thing. And I was like, what a weird contraption. Like, Nintendo was just there like, look at this amazing world we've created. Look at the fact that Ganondorf is back. Look at all of these heroes that will be supporting Link on his journey. Look at all the emotion, the drama. And then it's just like, clinky clonky, binky bonky. And it's just like...
It's the Homer Simpson car. Like, it's literally just the Homer Simpson car applied to The Legend of Zelda.
Could they not have made a slightly cooler looking car for the trailer that's meant to sell it? Like, the only thing that I look at when I think of this, I'm just like, you go like, wait, what? What was that?
It's just, I'm up for it. It's a weird, weird game. The way they've rolled it out, obviously they held a lot of stuff back. And then very recently, because it's out next month, they've sort of said like, okay, fine, we'll show you guys what we've been making.
Fine. I guess you want to pre-order it then.
But it's just it's the weirdest thing because it does look so similar to Breath of the Wild, but then it is this like weird DLC style add-on thing that obviously I get the more story. It's going to feel like a sequel, but at first glance, it looks like a bunch of mods for Breath of the Wild.
I've got no problem with it because it's like, did you watch the gameplay expansion trailer they did as well, where it showed you how you could fuse items together and you had all of these other little bits like that.
You put like a kettle on the end of a stick or something.
Yeah, like that alone is going to create a lot of variance in gameplay. Like, my biggest worry about going into Tears of the Kingdom was because Breath of the Wild was so different from its predecessors, that's why it received such universal acclaim, because it was basically saying like, look, we have perfected the dungeon crawler style adventure game that you know and love. Now let's apply the open world formula to it. And a lot of people were amazed by it, and I don't think you'll get that same sense of amazement going into Tears of the Kingdom because it is the same backbone that this is being built on. So adding in these new elements of how you approach combat, how you approach traversal, those actually, when you boil it down, are the two biggest things that you need to nail in an open world game. What is the thing that you and I always say is the bugbear of the open world genre? It's having too much space with nothing to do and doing the same thing over and over again. Being able to build your own car, bike, plane, whatever it is that they're allowing you to do in this game, and then attack enemies with custom-made weapons similar to the sort of Dead Rising franchise of comboing things together. Those two aspects there, they're going to give longevity to the game, even if it was exactly the same map. So I'm actually quite interested in how they've approached that.
Yeah, I remember the very beginning of Breath of the Wild, and one of the greatest things about that game is just improvising every combat scenario. And I like the whole, one of the first group of like moblins or whatever that you find, there's a big boulder on the edge of a cliff, and it's like, well, you can probably go up there and push it off. I like the idea of just thinking in a different way with this, where it's like, I can probably attach some propellers to that boulder and then fly it into them and then fly it to the next mission goal or something, or like reverse time and see where something came from or whatever. So like, yeah, that is really interesting. I'm kind of waiting for it all to like come together as I play. did, I guess, at this
point. I guess if I was to say that if I had any concerns, it would probably be the sense of if those combo weapons are so powerful, if there is one type of vehicle that's just incredibly better than others, once players find out the hacks, then you're just going to end up creating those types of weapon over and over again. Like, at least in Breath of the Wild, you had to improvise with your weapons because they would have the durability and you would only be able to get them from finite areas and find them in like specific locations. Whereas this one is like, say you've got 10 sticks in your bag and you've got the kettle, like you were saying before, and that turns out to be the best weapon in the game. Like, that then is going to remove the variance that I was just saying they're introducing, because people will just play it the same way. It's a common thing that... it's kind of like the Oxbow Lake. You remember learning about that in geography, mate?
It rings a bell. I was terrible at geography.
It's basically when you've got like a little S bend in a river, right? And the water erosion is going to go against one side of it, and over hundreds and hundreds of years, eventually it will erode all the way through that that little section, and it will create a little island on its own because the water will want to get to its destination the quickest way possible. And I feel like gaming is exactly the same way. If there is a path of least or lesser resistance, then gamers are always going to take that path.
That's like when you see like the edge of like some well-cut grass, and then it's just like a muddy path walked to cut between, the corner.
Exactly that. It's like, will not waste that extra second.
We've got to get there.
Yeah.
But yeah, Zelda seems like just looks really cool. I like that they've sort of played their cards really close to their chest. I'm just, when I looked at it, I thought of Nuts and Bolts, and I don't mind that game. I'm kind of up for the whole.
Oh, I do. Immensely.
The whole like I don't know, stumble and Homer Simpson your way through a game thing. So hopefully it fits better here than it did then. We should get to some questions though, because I forget if I mentioned that the UBP is all about whatever gaming questions.
Yeah, what other people think, not just what we think.
People have tons of Japan questions. Like I said, I don't want to make this a Japan podcast.
Absolutely,
I'll reply
fine.
To a lot of people on Twitter as well, because I want to give more advice and stuff, because I did go all out. We've been saving up for years. This was a dream trip, and we managed to do Tokyo, Kyoto, and Osaka, so it was a lot of stuff. Willie Araya and Jarvis both asked what were the best geekiest gaming things that it did in Japan. I'll probably just say the Super Nintendo World, but also paying ludicrous amounts for the Pokemon Cafe and the Kirby Cafe, and being danced at by a giant Pikachu in the Pokemon Cafe.
Not too at, aggressively. No,
yeah, very much dances at you. It was very fun. I think, doing the Final Fantasy Cafe, like just any of the gaming themed cafes, I think are really, really fun. The best one by far is Kirby. Just the food's actually really good.
Is it actually though? Because there is a Warhammer Cafe out in Japan that they have just opened up in Tokyo as well, called the Knights Cafe. Plug. Go there. Go get served by, I don't know if a Space Marine actually serves you there, but still.
He just chainsaws your steak in half.
Yeah. Goes everywhere. Through the table.
I tell you what, the worst one by far is the Capcom one. One was just dead, and the actual things that were on offer were just largely tasteless. But if you want a sort of weird jelly cocktail that looks like Mega Man, then you can. But there's not
jelly
much else to it.
Cocktail.
Yeah, it was a bit weird, But the Kirby stuff was really, really good. Kirby burgers. Kirby's just one of the best characters ever. So eating his face over and over again was—he's a really good character. He's got loads going on.
Oh, he's got loads going on, mate. He's one of the greatest characters ever in video games. Oh,
I love Kirby, and he loves me. And I'll just go with that. Super Nintendo World, absolutely phenomenal. But we bought so much swag. We visited like 5 Pokemon centers across Japan. Because my wife was collecting all the evolutions for Eevee. So we've got a collection of Eevee plushes at this point, and all the exclusive Pikachus per region, because we're just that freaky.
Did you play Pokemon Go when you were out there? Did you make use of that?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Any exclusive stuff there?
I'm not sure if it was over here as well, but they had, because we went over for the Cherry Blossom Festival, which is like a whole, like it's kind of like their autumnal, wintery kind of period. And obviously all the Cherry Blossom trees, all the Sakura trees go beautifully like pink, and they blossom, and it's really, really gorgeous. So we timed it for that. And luckily we managed to, the season moved around a bit, but we managed to line up with it. So in Pokemon Go, they had some like Cherry Blossom themed Pokemon. And I don't know if they were over here, because I guess the festival is still going on around the world, I guess. But obviously it's more specific to Japan. But I caught a Pikachu with a little Sakura cherry blossom and Ted.
Oh, that's cool.
And there was a Buniri. There was like 3 or 4 Pokemon that were all like cherry blossom themed. But these days for Pokemon Go, I mean, it's been 7 years since that game came out. I tend to just catch a Pokemon when I'm doing anything of note and just call it whatever I'm doing.
Right,
so, and
then okay.
I just treat it like a weird living diary thing. So I've got like Pokemon called like Cousin's Wedding or like Landing in Kyoto or whatever.
And everyone loves that Squirtle that's just called 7 Hours.
I don't think I caught one during that because I was like,
and that would be the first thing I would have done. I want to remember like, play that. A game. Just literally, just go like, right, fine. Look, I'm bored. I've got to waste 7 hours.
Hey, folks. I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So it's like that's like remembering the flights on the way there. It's like, oh, I remember the 13-hour flight we did. Yeah, that was fun. But yeah, I just definitely played a lot of Pokemon Go. Did an absolute ton of Pokemon stuff in general. And just I'd say the single most geeky thing was when I got my power up band for Nintendo World. I jumped like Mario and I punched the block above me.
Yeah.
Because I've never felt more complete. And I am married, but I felt like that was an incredible thing to do.
You've got the power band resized now, and it's become your wedding ring.
Shrink it down to make a little rubber ring. I'll tell you what's really cool, and it's not that cool because they're clearly really overpriced. But
you can't
every
say
one
it's
of those,
really cool and then immediately say it's not that
well, it's
cool.
It's cool to me, an absolute freak who loves the Super Mario movie. But the power-up bands double as their characters' amiibos. So like Mario, I think, is quite rare or quite expensive now. Yeah. But if you drop whatever the stupid amount of money is on a power-up band, you can. It has amiibo tech in it, so you can use that on your Switch.
That's pretty cool.
And then just act like you have the amiibo or whatever. If you're an absolute madman and likes your amiibos, like I do.
Yeah, fair play.
I did have a question from Adam Davies saying, did I get a knife in Kyoto? Now, I wanted fancy... did you get knifed in Kyoto?
Did you get bladed?
Did I acquire a knife?
Right.
I wanted a specific... You've probably seen them. There's like really, really super sharp Japanese knives. They're called Gyuto knives. And it's the same way that samurai swords used to be made.
Folded steel.
Yeah, it's like folded and tempered, and it becomes this extremely sharp kitchen knife. And so I didn't get a knife in Kyoto, but I did tweet about that, or I replied to this dude, and he recommended, being able to bring it back in a suitcase and stuff. I did get one from Osaka. I got like a really like badass, huge Gyuto knife. So I was just like,
how was that getting through customs?
Well, it went through the... As long as it's in a suitcase, it's okay.
Oh, okay.
So, like,
yeah.
The UK has a thing where you can't bring bladed weapons and stuff back into the country. So, like, the length of that knife was, like, just enough that it wasn't classed as a sword.
Ooh.
So, like, not that it was a big, long knife, but like, if you got a longer one, it would have been, like, illegal or something. But, yeah, the temptation to just buy a bunch of katanas and stuff when I was there was very strong. I'll tell you what I did do as well. I threw some ninja stars.
Oh, nice, nice.
I was... we went to the Osaka Castle, and there was, like, a thing where you paid, I think it was, like, 300 yen... And you could pick up like 5 shurikens and just ping them into a wall.
Amazing.
That was incredible.
Was this a legitimate vendor, or was it just a guy just being like,
just a guy.
Just throw some shrapnel at a wall, kids, 300 yen.
I've got this carrier bag.
You're throwing it against the side of the castle. You're like eroding the historical monument, just pinging bits off the plaster.
That was really, really fun. other stuff for Japan, it was just people saying that they're going to be going soon and what would I recommend. I would definitely recommend putting the time into learning the language. I've done Japanese lessons for about half a year, so even though it's all really basic stuff, it is enough to order some food, to say thank you, to you know, point to different things in a shop and be like, this and this and this, I would like to buy this, thank you very much, you know, this looks beautiful or whatever.
Who did you learn with, mate?
I just went with Duolingo.
Right. So listen, Duolingo, this is a free plug right now. Scott managed to survive in Japan, which is one of the hardest languages to learn, Japanese, and he managed to survive using your app. Sponsor us, all right? That's a free one.
I thought their stuff was, their app sometimes bugs the F out
stuff. Not on this ad read, mate. That's absolutely fine. Bring it back.
I did get complimented on my Japanese by a woman in Golden
Testimonial.
Yeah, next to Shinjuku in Tokyo. So that was very nice. And it was lovely speaking the language. This is really cheesy, but I love connecting with people. I love talking other languages. I absolutely love that. A whole ability to, like, especially when you've been in a queue with people who are just sort of pointing and yelling at people and going like, can I have this? Yeah. This thing, please. Yeah. Yeah. And then I could go up and just say something like, kore kudasai or whatever. And like, that was like, that felt cool. That felt like, okay, I can make this easier for you. We can actually have a conversation or something. So that was fun. I definitely recommend putting some time into the language stuff.
Nice.
I'll make a point of replying to a lot of other people because I do want to try and give as much specific feedback as possible without making this into a Japanese podcast.
Yep.
So I'll get there. This is a hybrid question for me and you from Andy Taylor, who said, what was my favorite place and favorite food from Japan? But also, Jules, on a scale from 1 to 100, how excited are you for the new Warhammer 40K 10th edition? Keep up the best podcast in the land. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, you answer your side of the question and then I'll transition into mine.
I will go for, as much as I loved ramen and like all the tempura stuff and getting lost in, you know, tempura squids and everything. I loved
lost
when
in them,
we
mate. Lost
just
in
lost
them.
Drowning in them. the thing I absolutely adored was when we found this really cool Wagyu beef place, where it was like, they have a really cool thing in Japan where they just give you a touch tablet and you just tap on it what you want to order and then just order.
You don't need to worry about like the language barrier in that sense.
No, and like some of them
understand
have.
Them.
Yeah, some of them just have like translation stuff built in, but it's like. You just kind of order a bit, and if you want seconds or you want a bit more food, you just tap it in. They bring you more. Just eat as much as you want. That was cool. We found this really great Wagyu place, which I forget the name of now, but it was in Osaka, where Wagyu beef was just phenomenal. It was just like sort of flambeing it on this insanely huge flame and being able to do that. Also, okonomiyaki. It's like a savory pancake.
Right up my street.
It's really nice. You'd have to break your vegan rule, but it's like a mix of, oh my God, it's like prawns, pork, I think, different meats and stuff. They basically make a mix, like a pancake mix, and it has like it looks like pancake batter, but all the ingredients are savory. And then they tip it out like on your table, and you have like a skillet thing in front of you, so it slowly becomes a pancake in front of you, and you have to flip it and keep it together. And then you like finish it off with like a specific sauce and some mayo and stuff. So we had a few of them in Tokyo and Osaka. So I definitely recommend that. You really can't go wrong. I mean, everything is absolutely incredible. I think it's called Shinsekai. I'm getting the name wrong, but there's a bunch of small pubs like izakayas, and you also get a bunch of like skewer-based food.
Oh, yes. I've heard about this, yeah.
I might be getting the name wrong.
It's basically like their version of bar snacks, isn't it?
Kind of, yeah. Like all the izakaya stuff I love. It's like you go in and it's just like a bar of like 3 or 4 seats. And it's like the bartender is just like, I have these 5 drinks and I'll tell you all about them. And like you just sort of get to sample stuff. We had some really good plum sake.
Ooh,
and,
nice.
But when you're in those places, they maybe do like some specific food or something. So yeah, you really can't go wrong. The standard of food is sky high. Even the vending machines, they had like heated coffee in the vending machines, which is like, that was really, really fun. Tell me about Warhammer, lest I keep talking at you about Japan.
Well, we move from one delicious snack over to another, because I've been chowing down on all of the morsels of information that Games Workshop have been drip feeding us over the past couple of weeks, because there is a brand new edition of Warhammer coming along, and this is a big deal, Scott, because the fact that it's not just a case of like, hey look, we've updated a few things here and there. Most of the times when they do a new edition, the whole rule set, the way of playing the entire game changes immensely. I'm really looking forward to it because of the fact that I love a bit of change and difference. Ninth edition is very complicated in places. I do hope that they stick to the mantra of simplifying some of it, although I don't think they will, because I feel like they are just trying to sell us index cards and codexes now instead of just one or the other. I'm looking forward to the new models. I'm looking forward to playing new variants of mission types. I'm also kind of enjoying the fact that they are removing the 500 point limit, which is the smallest battles. And they've introduced a 3,000-point game. So that means even bigger battles, even crazier things going on. So that means that... and also I found out the other day, thanks to a... Warhammer community post, of which I have been featured on. Plug.
Oh, here he is.
I know, right? Flex McMuscle. I found out that the Orc Stomper, which, Scott, is basically, think of the biggest robot in your mind, right? Right, okay. Think of it. Double it. Double it, mate. Double it, right? Yeah, just double it.
It's done.
And then instead of it being made out of nice, shiny parts, it's made out of scrap metal that had been fused together by orcs and goblins, right?
That's okay.
So it's looking pretty ugly, right?
Mine's like a giant double Gundam that's just sort of
You've literally got it right there. That is called a stomper, and stompers in the 9th edition were toughness 8. And I know what you're thinking, Scott. You don't know how to play this game. Toughness 8 doesn't sound like much.
I barely even know what you're referring to.
It's still pretty high, though. In 10th edition, they're toughness 14.
That's all. You can't even get near them.
You can't even imagine that, Scott. I'm looking at your face. I can't tell if it's confused or just the fact that you're trying to process the information of how tough this thing is.
What toughness would you be as you right now?
Oh, so as a regular man baby. So, put it this way. Regular humans in the 40K verse are toughness 3. So I would probably be toughness 2.
So toughness 14, though, is like an order of magnitude.
Oh, yeah, it's quite big. It's quite a big thing. So you might go
for a healthy 100 of excitement towards this new Warhammer thing.
I mean, I'm always there's always a bit of trepidation going into it, because it's like, what if the game that I play every single week with my friends is changing for the worst? But I am still holding out hope that GW know what they're doing. That's an in-joke. I'm excited. Very, very excited.
That sounds cool. Next question from Jacobs, who says, what was the first concert you ever attended? I was lucky enough to have Chiodos, Coheed and Cambria, and Linkin Park be mine. Hell of a show. That's a hell of a trio of bands.
That is a good one as well. I mean, I've seen Coheed and Cambria live once. They were on...
Same.
It wasn't the Taste of Chaos tour, but it was like a Kerrang tour that they did, which was a really weird mix, because it was Coheed and Cambria, Fight Star, and Medina Lake.
I saw an interview with Charlie. I was going to call him Charlie Day. Charlie Simpson.
Yeah, Charlie Simpson. That's it. Yeah,
there was an interview with Charlie Simpson the other day, and I was like, I've not thought about Charlie Simpson in about 20 years.
Yeah,
like, that's a long time.
Coheed and Cambria were brilliant because Claudio Sanchez. That's the lead singer.
Claudio Sanchez. Yeah.
He did loads of guitar changes throughout the gig, as you would, because it's obviously he plays crazy riffs.
Yeah, he loves a different tuning for every part of a song.
And he gets out this white double-necked guitar that had a white feathered angel wing coming off the strap. And I was like, he's literally the one-winged angel Sephiroth. So I was like, this is amazing.
I saw Coheed at Download. I forget what year that would have been in. But yeah, Coheed's new album, by the way, is phenomenal. Like in terms of, you know, a lot of people got into them on that Volume 4, the one with like Welcome Home and stuff. But they're new
Good
ones.
Apollo.
Yeah, Good Apollo on Burning Volume 4.
Yeah. The longest name in history. Like, I love it because it's like, you feel like whenever you're talking to music fans and you have to recommend an album and you start with something like, it's like episode 4, Good Apollo on Burning. And they're just like, you can see their eyes glaze over like, what are you saying? Why isn't the album called Madman or like Smash, like most other things?
Actually, have you heard the new Metallica stuff yet? That album's out today.
I have heard the new Metallica stuff. First one, which was that...
Lux Eterna.
I was going to call it Viva La Viva Viva because I couldn't remember what it was actually called. Yeah, Lux Eterna. I thought that was fine, like a good 7 out of 10 song. Mm-hmm. And then I heard the other one that was after that and I was like... Nah.
Screaming Suicide was a bit naff. And then If Darkness Had a Son, I don't know, I haven't got through the whole album yet, and I've heard the final song is like maybe the best thing they've ever done. It's like this 11-minute like epic thing where Hetfield's just talking about like his addiction and giving it, and he's divorced and like he's just laying it all out about where he's at in his life. And I was like, that's really cool. I want to see what that sounds like.
That's the one problem that I've had with Metallica over the years, is that when they were struggling, when they were on the come up, it was interesting because you could feel the anger, you could feel the passion. It gave their lyrics real biting edge because it was like they were spitting in your face because they were the new sound on the block and you were going to learn to love them. But as the years have gone on and they've become a bit soft around the edges, so too is their music. It hasn't had that bite, because what do you complain about when you have had everything? When you have become the most hated band in the world thanks to that Napster thing that Lars Ulrich came out with, it's a case of like, you're fighting an image while trying to present another image. Like, we're still cool and hip. So that's when like Lux Eterna came out. I was like, okay, maybe there is a bit of energy back in the band now. But then the other two that came out after us, I was a bit like, eh.
Yeah. I know. I quite like the stuff that, like, because Hetfield's only gone more inward. Like, he's always just been able to do that. Like, I'm obviously just saved. Metallica's one of my favorite bands. Mm. So, like, I have a Metallica tattoo and everything. So I quite like that he's sort of gone more introspective. And I love Spit Out the Bone off Hardwired, yes, where he's just talking about, like, rejecting, giving into technology and algorithms and everything. I was like, that's cool. But yeah, the new one, there's a song called Shadows Chase Me or something. I think that's really good. It's like the third song or something. But I've not got through all of it yet.
I can't remember where it was or how I even ended up on this video, but there was the band talking to different celebrities who say that they were inspired by Metallica, and Sir Elton John phones in and says basically like, this song is amazing, it's absolutely fantastic.
Nothing Else Matters.
And you could see Hetfield just going like, oh bloody hell, this is actually amazing, because you think of Metallica as being the untouchables in that sense of like, they've gotten to that the top of the metal mountain and they've never been usurped by in the eyes of many fans. But to have somebody come over from a pop adjacent sphere and say, your work influenced me and I love what you do, that must be amazing to be recognized by your peers at that level.
Well, the stuff as well with like Hetfield's vocal ability has only gotten better. Like, there's some stuff on this new album that he's singing in ways that he's never like sung before. And I was like, I like that he's pushing himself even at like, I don't know how old he is, late 50s. And it's like, that's really, really impressive. Like, even the chorus for Luxie Turner is like one of the most projected sort of big choruses he's done. And like, that stuff's really, really cool. So, but yeah, in terms of the first gig, my first one that I bought, because I used to always go to my friends would play music in high schools or like in different bars and clubs and stuff. And so I did that for ages for my live music thing.
Yeah.
I think the first band that I paid money for, I think, was Velvet Revolver.
Whoa, and
it was right when they were breaking up. It was sort of like they were coming to like Newcastle, like northeast of England, where we are, or where I was. And they were coming up, so I was like, oh, I should go see Velvet Revolver. Yeah. And I think they broke up like the week after. But I think that was my first paid for gig. I never did that thing that a lot of people do where they go and see radio bands when they're like five or something. They go see S Club 7 or whatever. I never did that, so... Mine would be Velvet Revolver, as ridiculous as that is.
I was in the same boat where I didn't actually go to any sort of like pop or gigs or anything like that. I just, I went to, was the first, I think the first gig I went to was Bloodhound Gang, that my friend was just like, let's just go and see this. And it was the first time that it was like my parents saying, you can go out on your own with your friends as long as, because it was my friend Mickey. Yeah, he had his dad wait outside in the car the entire gig because he didn't want to go in. So it was just us three or four like very young kids watching this. We probably shouldn't have watched it because it was quite a disgusting show thinking about it. Like the bassist or guitarist, I can't remember who the really jacked one was from the Bloodhound Gang, he downed an entire bottle of Jack Daniels in one go, which is like medically irresponsible, right?
Yes.
And then he projectile vomited over the back of the lead singer during the next song. It was absolutely disgusting. And then for the rest of the gig, he kept on like, you know when like certain bands think they're hard, so they start spitting into the crowd or like doing like just being gross. He did that, and I actively was feeling revulsion because I was like, you've just been sick, bro. Like, first off, have a little sit down, have a cup of tea, put some toast in your tummy and make sure you feel better. But also,
come back tomorrow.
Don't be spitting your sick over the crowd.
That's a bad
don't be spitting
like
full stop.
No, exactly. Yeah. Don't be spitting on the crowd. Don't be spitting full stop. Or be spitting on people. I also think that like him being like, nah, I'm fine. I'll just keep going.
Yeah.
How do you get this right?
How do you, like, I've heard this whole thing of like, oh, tactical chunder, innit, mate? Like you go and have a sick and then get back on the pints. No, if you're sick, go to bed. You're done.
Oh, that was such a time. That was like 2013 or whatever. Like that whole, oh, a tactical chunder. And that
it's still
one
going
video
on, man. Like, I don't know what it's called now. Like it's tactical puke, maybe. It's maybe like the equivalent. I don't even know what the Americans would call it.
I don't know. I feel like overall that was such a tactic. Because, I can even drink more if I throw up at this specific point in the night.
Gross.
It's a bad time. We should end on something that's a lot more nice from Jacob Sawyer, who says, gentlemen, I've recently invested in a PlayStation 2 with my partner and we have both been reliving our childhoods.
Legends.
Any recommendations? Also, Despicable Me has a PS2 game.
Nope.
Wild.
Nope. Nope. We will not be recommending Despicable Me 2 or 1 on the PlayStation 2. Okay, so are we just going to get the deepest cuts we possibly can for them? Because I feel like this is our wheelhouse, Scott. We lived our lives in the PS2 era. And
we did.
Off the top of my head, I know that I'd want to recommend Second Sight. Definitely go and play that.
Oh, okay.
You should recommend PsyOps because I know
would
that those
PsyOps.
Two always go together.
I was trying to think if they meant like co-op stuff, but I can't think of that many.
They only get to play what we tell them to. Get yourself Destruction Derby Raw as well. I believe that was the one that came out.
I think there was a Destruction Derby game on PS2.
Was it? I'm thinking of the PlayStation 1.
Destruction Derby 1 and 2. I remember 2's physics being incredible. I remember like just crashing into stuff to watch all the paint flakes fly off. And just like the idea of...
Destruction Derby
Arenas.
I never
raced in that. Oh, okay. I never raced in that game. I would just launch my car off whatever angular part of the road there was to fly around. I might just be the jet lag talking, but I'm blanking on the entire category of PlayStation 2 games right now. Okami would stand out.
Yeah, Okami is definitely a great one.
Beautiful Joe.
Oh, what a great game that was there.
God Hand, one of yours?
Wait, on the PS2, I believe as well, we got Dante included, didn't we, in the port? Because
Dante was on the PS2 one. Yeah.
And there's a little side story as well, like concerning him, which is quite good.
I tell you what, actually, I was slagging off the Capcom Cafe earlier on, and I will continue to do the slag off the cafe portion
of
it.
Thank you.
The merchandise part of it wasn't that much better, but they did have a little like plush Dante that was like a little like a little bun. If you know that, you know that like that range
Steamed
of plushies. Oh my god, I did get a pork bun.
Yes,
I know that Sleeping Dogs is like set in Hong Kong and everything, but they did have pork buns.
Nice.
But yeah, you know that like those plushies that they look like little tablets. I'm going to describe this horribly, but there's a rush of a style of plush creature that you can now get in many outlets. I think they're called like Pew Pews or something.
Oh, okay.
And there's a one.
Okay.
He's lost his mind. Okay. There was a one of them.
Are you sure this wasn't what you dreamed up on your flight back home, mate?
The 13 hours.
Yeah.
There was a Dante one of them, a Dante Pew Pew or a Tutu or a Flu Flu or whatever the hell they're called.
Okay.
In the Capcom store. I just wanted to mildly point out that thing existed, and I can't remember what it's called, but it was one of them.
Okay, fair enough.
Let me tell you.
I'd also recommend, do you remember the game that spawned Guitar Hero and Rock Band?
Guitar
Frequency.
Freaks? Oh, Frequency.
Do you remember that?
Okay.
Where you controlled, or maybe it was called Amplitude. It was. I know that we got one of the two naming conventions here in the UK, and it was called the other outside of it. Basically, for those not in the know, it was a load of early 2000s rap rock, new wave, and like dance music tracks. Mm-hmm. But you controlled a tiny little ship, and you would move between the vocal line, the bass line, drums, guitar, rhythm. Mm-hmm. And you'd have to input little like prompts, kind of like the Guitar Hero thing with the fretboard coming towards you. It was fantastic, that game. I loved it.
I want to shout out, I don't know if you had the music games on PS1, but you can get like Music 2000.
No.
It was just called Music 2000, and the icon was like a little sort of like a little face with some shades on.
Okay.
And like, it was just music creation software, but it was just so cool. And obviously for the late 90s, you're in the middle of all the like Brit poppy, Brit dance stuff. And
oh
it was,
yeah,
like,
you could that just was go, exploding then, wasn't it?
Yeah, you could just go make your own pill popping music yourself, even though I was like 9 years old. But
like,
I was loving
that. Pass me the eckies, mate. Let's go.
Pass me the tiny eckies.
Yeah. And pass me the pew-pews.
And so I would recommend that. That's on the PS1, but there was a music game for the PS2 as well. I'm just looking over a bit of artwork. I remember Mark of Cree. I would shout out Mark of Cree.
Mark of Cree, that was with the guy in the front who looked like a barbarian holding an axe.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I remember that.
It was like Disney, it was a crossover with Disney or something, and they had like Disney artwork
actually?
And stuff
oh,
to it.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I always thought it would have worked as like an animation or something. Like it would have been a cool like 2D style animation, but they never went further with it.
Bro. Hurdy-gurdy. Please play hurdy-gurdy. Make me realize that I'm not the only one who remembers how good this game is.
I remember hurdy-gurdy. I would also shout out, this is the weirdest pick, but my mind's just remembered this, the MX versus ATV games. It was MX versus ATV.
Oh, they
Unleashed.
Were extreme, bro.
Yeah, but like as a co-op thing, if they're going to play anything multiplayer, I remember just going into the multiplayer and each of you were just driving around in that sort of like condensed space, doing stunts over each other and trying to compete and everything. And I'm sure in that game you could race, someone could be a plane, someone else could be a bike or whatever, and you could race each other as like multiple vehicle races and stuff. I'm very hazy because of the jet lag and because it's been 20 years, but I'm pretty sure all that stuff was in that game. So I would heartily recommend it.
And I think our final recommendation, and I know that Scott will back me up on this, when you want to get the co-ops done and you just want to kick each other's ass, go get a Tekken Tag Tournament.
That game is
endless fun.
Yes, I think we're sort of like, I remember reading something that was like Tekken Tag was a massive disappointment, and I was like, no, it wasn't for us.
I mean, the end boss with the giant lady with the unknown with the wolf ghost behind her, I was a bit like,
yeah, it's a bit naff. I just remember, because I guess it was like criticized for being like another Tekken, but at the time it was like, this is beautiful, it plays really, really well.
It looks amazing. The graphics have been updated. You've got the entire roster of every single game that came before it and a few extras. You've got all the stages.
Everyone's all the tag moves as well.
Yeah, all the tag moves were fantastic. It is a tag game on top of it. Dude, what was the hate about that game?
Also, that game's soundtrack, the opening cutscene music, those little piano notes, like, oh my God. Yeah, the PS2 was a good time. That was a lovely time. Also been a lovely time is the Entitled Partner Podcast, the UBP,
The UBP.
I've been Scott Tilford. That's been Jules Gill.
I have indeed. And remember, you can go every single Thursday to our social medias and find out the call for questions, which is going to be over at Retro J with a 0 for myself, and it's going to be at /LP89 for Scott. Go there every Thursday. Keep your eye out for the call for question.
Beautiful. Thanks again for everybody sending in their questions, talking points, etc. And we'll catch you next week. Goodbye.
Arigato and sayonara.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.